Let the spirit of the Kennedys
and the magic of the Disney brothers be with you always.
Blood and Business Legacy merch, available now.
Let's run faster,
work harder,
burn brighter
before we're gone.
Order your Blood and Business Legacy merch today.
For a group of people who don't want to face bad things, it was hard. Harder than death, because with death, they always went on. We need to talk about the Kennedy siblings. Episode 16. Welcome to Blood and Business.
I'm Bethany.
And I'm Cassie.
Welcome to today's KFM. Today we are going to be discussing Joe Sr.'s stroke and essentially how Rose coped or did not cope with the events. It is going to be a lot of callbacks from Rosemary's story and also going to set you up with the information that you need and the family dynamic that you need to understand going forward in the main episodes, because it did affect.
It changed the family dynamic a ton. This is also when dynamics changed as far as like Eunice and Sarge and Stephen Smith taking over a lot more of the Joseph P. Kennedy Foundation.
You're right. It did affect a lot of the in-laws' role in the family as well.
Yeah. It's like they almost were fully accepted after this in a way that they hadn't been previously. Yeah.
It also helps us understand a little bit better, like we said, Rosemary's story.
It gives context to a lot of prior and upcoming events. So we are going to primarily be using The Kennedy Women by Lawrence Leamer as our source for this today, because he gives, obviously, the story of the women. And so it's very much the family dynamic and not as much the political, presidential. And a lot of the Jack books, the JFK books, they mention his stroke. They mention, you know, how that affected Jack, but they don't really talk about the full change in the family dynamic. And Lawrence Leamer does give us a lot of insight into that and a lot of insight into the actual event of that day and how it went down, which is also absent from a lot of the JFK books.
And is such a stomach-churning, heartbreaking
repeat of events.
Yeah.
Ugh. Yeah. So if you aren't as interested in the family dynamics of the Kennedy family, you can probably skip this episode. But if you want to know what the Kennedys' world was like in the 60s, you must listen to this episode.
Yeah, it'll be a little bit like the Peter Lawford story in that it is a timeline sort of set apart from the Kennedy siblings in our main episodes. But it directly, like, I feel like without knowing Peter Lawford, you could not understand Pat.
No.
How she was as a wife, what she chose, what she didn't choose, ever getting remarried.
It's her role in Jack's life.
Yeah.
Her role in the presidential years.
How much Pat meant to Jack as well. If you don't understand those dynamics, this just paints a better full picture of what was going on. For those that love Jackie, it also does paint a really good, we get to see a glimpse into how Jackie could have and probably wanted to respond to Jack in his times of crisis, but he refused to let her. Whereas Joe Sr. allows Jackie to be there for him. And that makes me sad and makes me think about the episodes where we're discussing their relationship.
Yeah.
What Jackie was kind of missing out on, what she wanted to be and how she wanted to care for people emotionally, and where Jack and Jackie were kind of on the path too. Yeah. When he died. So that's also just like cool to think about and sort of like plug in that information into the greater timeline.
Yeah.
That makes me sad. Me too. Jackie.
Rose was 71 years old and Joe a vigorous 73. Joe made a point of staying away from the White House. And although Jack called his father regularly, Joe did not have the influence that some had expected.
Wow.
Yeah. In Palm Beach, late in the fall of 1961, Joe was talking to Frank Waldrop. Remember him?
Ish.
He was Kick's boss at the Times Herald.
Okay, yes.
And then he was something of the Times Herald.
John White.
John White. Thank you. John White's boss and Inga's boss, Inga Arvid, and then Jackie's boss, who warned her
not to
Jack
marry.
Has been around a lot longer than you. He's a lot smarter than you. Watch out.
Uh-huh.
And the next thing he knew, they were engaged. So Joe Sr. was talking to Frank Waldrop, the newspaper editor that he had known since the isolationist years of the late 30s. Joe was not a man to confide the emotional truths of his life to others, certainly not to Rose. He wasn't a man to let others get anything on him that might be used against him, but there were a few men to whom he sometimes exposed glimpses of his inner self. As the two men walked on the beach, Waldrop turned to Joe and said admiringly,
"It's so incredible about Jack as president. You must feel so great."
Joe turned and looked at his old friend.
"I get awfully blue sometimes."
And then continued down the beach.
But he didn't say why.
I think maybe because he was so used to being in such communication with them and so used to hanging out with them all the time. And then they're so busy and he doesn't get to be their dad in the same way anymore.
Yeah, that. And also, do you think it had anything to do with Joe, like missing
probably
Joe Jr. as well.
Mm-hmm.
That he's like grieving the loss of his eldest son.
Yeah.
I mean, the way that we talked about it in the Peter Lawford KFMs, KFM 14, at the very end of part two, he writes that letter to Jack, talking to him 20 years after he's passed.
Peter Lawford writes to Jack.
Yes. And we talked about how what just lonely and how boring of a life you would have after having gone through the
hustle and the bustle
of
the
election of the presidency, like just even just having all of the Kennedy kids around.
Well, and for Joe Sr., Hollywood and Great Britain and being the ambassador and going to Con.
I mean, there were like how many Can. Kids?
I always want to say Con and it's just Can.
Having so many people in and out of the house. I mean, it would literally feel like Christmas all the time. Like what we think of as Christmas with all of the family around no one's going to work, you know. Then all of your kids grow up and then they move so
and
far away
still,
and they're like untouchable kind
when they're grown up, they're still around so much because they're doing the campaign and they're doing a ton of their stuff all together, even into their 30s.
Yeah.
But then once they get to the White House, it's so high pressure and
it almost feels
he
like
he just disappears kind of like,
yeah. But it's kind of interesting because it's like the siblings were still able to
access him.
Yeah. A ton. Like he would visit Pat and Peter and take Teddy or Bobby with him.
Yeah.
Eunice was always calling and talking to him, was always hanging out with Jack, and they had their political stuff that they were involved in together.
Yeah, she was at the White House all the time.
Yeah, doing stuff for Special Olympics, disabilities.
Well, and Sarge worked there too.
And Sarge worked there, exactly. And then Jean, because her husband worked really closely with Jack, she was always at the White House hanging out with Jackie and the kids. And then obviously Bobby and Ethel were, either Jack was hanging out with them at the White House or Jack was hanging out with Bobby and Ethel at their house.
Mm-hmm.
So they were also always together. And then Teddy worked for Jack
initially. And then he ended up becoming a representative. Well, actually, did he take, I think he took Jack's Senate seat. But we will be talking about that.
But Teddy was probably maybe the least.
He is in DC though.
Okay.
You know what I mean?
Yeah, that's true.
He took Jack's Massachusetts Senate seat.
So
when
all
he turned
the siblings
30.
Are still, all the remaining siblings are
in DC.
Yeah, still in close contact, still hanging out all the time. All of their kids are growing up together, so they've got that. And then Joe and Rose are
more irrelevant than they've ever been.
That has to be lonely, even if it's like not a negative thing,
right? It's not, and you lonely. Want like you would want that nester. For your kids, but it still sucks.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Joe never had time for endless social niceties of life in a resort community. The kibitzing on the golf course, the lassitude of lying on the beach without a phone, the interminable parties with the same faces. He headed off first thing each morning at 8 o'clock to meet his friends for a game of golf. The competition spiced with a few bets and the latest gossip. So this is his only social outlet, pretty much, is 8 a.m. every single morning. He had no time for Rose with her game of short drives. Rose understood, as she had understood so many things, and headed out later. She could have gotten someone to accompany her, but she was usually by herself, her face protected against the tropical sun, a tiny dot of a woman scurrying along the fairway. So
she plays golf by herself.
Yes, every day. This is their Palm Beach home.
And that's the one that they never renovated?
That's the one that doesn't have air conditioning.
They're sitting there.
They didn't do much to high-end sport either, but...
Also, they were both such workaholics their whole life. Even just that, like, why did they even attempt to retire? They're in their 70s here, though.
Right, so...
They're, like, kind of getting old. Like, they need to slow down. Their body is forcing them to slow down.
She wasn't out for the sport, but for the exercise. Oh my gosh, of course. Rose started to play in the middle of the course somewhere, inserting herself between groups.
Oh my god.
Placing three balls on the ground and hitting them one after another. Three balls. That was her regimen. She would hurry out onto the fairway, hit away, play three holes, then tuck her club under her arm and head back to the house in North Palm Beach.
And she was tiny.
The best times were still when the family was together. In mid-December, Joe drove to the airport to meet Caroline and John, accompanied by their nurse, who had flown down on the Caroline from Washington. Jackie and Jack were on a trip to South America, and on their return, Jack's plane touched down in the Florida resort. Jack could only spend one day relaxing, a decent respite in the life of a president, and Joe saw his son off the next morning, December 19th, 1961, while Rose went Christmas shopping on Worth Avenue. It was always something of a letdown when Air Force One lifted off from the tarmac, taking Jack away. As his companion, Joe turned to his niece, Anne Gargan. Anne was one of the lesser Kennedys. She and her brother Joe had been looked after by Rose and Joe after the death of their parents. And if you watch the movie Chappaquiddick, he is the one with the glasses. He's the one that's played by Andy from The Office. He also is one of the ones that, or he was with Bobby when they stole the bus.
That's what I was going to say, yeah.
At Jack's bachelor party. So Anne had wanted to become a nursing nun. After 3 years in the convent, she developed multiple sclerosis and had to leave the order. And Joe had always had a special liking for her. And so she ended up kind of becoming his caretaker in his old age.
Oh, wow.
She was just his nurse that was around all the time. And her and Rose got along, but Joe and Rose both had a like love-hate relationship with Anne Gargan. She was a lot. So Anne recuperated from her own illness and became a useful person to have around. So I think that she had come back, quote-unquote, home to
Joe and Rose
when she got sick. And then she recuperated and was able to help them out in their old age.
Okay.
She had a giddy sense of humor that her Uncle Joe especially appreciated. While playing golf with Anne, after Jack's departure, the day Jack went back to D.C., Joe felt a little weak on the sixth hole, but thought nothing of it. Though he felt queasy, he was sure his problem would soon go away. Then he began to wander drunkenly around the golf course, and Anne shepherded him into a golf cart, and then a car brought him back to the house.
Was he able to walk into the house?
Rose asked as she returned from her shopping trip and learned that Joe was in bed. That was always the way she asked questions, seeking the positive, not how bad is he, how okay is he?
Yes, but I had to help him,
Anne said. Rose went into her husband's room and had a little chat with Joe. Rose asked how Joe felt. She knew what he would answer, what she would answer in the same situation, and she left saying that he would be fine after a little nap. Rose returned to Joe's room after lunch. He was deteriorating now, and a physician was called. The doctor arrived immediately and requested an ambulance from the ambulance service of Palm Beach. The attendants wheeled Joe into the ambulance, and Anne jumped in beside him. Rose stood there as the ambulance pulled out of the driveway, its siren blaring. Always before, in these great and terrible moments of death and disease, Joe had been there, shielding her from the unpalpable truths. Rose was alone now, and she had no intention of going to the hospital. Not now, not yet. What she did not see did not exist. Rosemary all over again.
Mm-hmm.
What she did not feel did not touch her.
There's nothing I can do except pray,
she told Frank Saunders. The chauffeur saw that her face was a deadly pale, denying her words, advertising her unspoken fear.
He'll be all right. Anne's with him. He'll be fine. You'll see. I just cannot let this get me down. I must keep up my schedule. I have my routine. I'm going to play golf now, Frank. Yes, I will play.
Rose went to the Palm Beach Golf Club course and drove her three balls up the fairway as she always did. And in the perpetual sun on impeccable greens, life went on as it always did. Denial and routine. They had always been her friends, and they were her companions this day. Again and again, she hit the three balls until she looked up, startled, as a golf cart headed right at her.
Mrs. Kennedy, the hospital called and they want you to come,
Saunders said, his voice charged with emotion.
Oh, what is it?
Rose said irritably. She could not understand why they didn't leave her alone.
It's the hospital. What can I do? They need you to sign some papers. Oh, very well.
The chauffeur insisted that Rose go immediately to St. Mary's Hospital, but she would have nothing of it. She ordered Saunders to take her back to the house.
He'll be all right,
she said.
I'm going to take a swim first,
Frank.
Oh my gosh. No, she's not.
She just can't.
Literally cannot.
She did not have the coping skills in place.
She refuses to acknowledge any sort of reality in moments of crisis.
So it isn't that she didn't care about Rosemary, about Joe.
It's that she cares too much. She cares too much. If I allow any emotion, I will be crushed by this. And they just had such a sense of responsibility to be productive, to live life to the fullest.
She couldn't crumble. No. It wasn't acceptable. It wasn't going to be okay.
And it was also the upbringing.
Mm-hmm. Rose changed into her swimsuit and slowly let herself down into the pool and began doing her laps across the shallow end. She swam the same way she played golf, without any exhilaration or intensity, but with methodical strokes. She had kept herself so fit and trim, not indulging like so many Palm Beach matrons, never eating too much, never getting tipsy on liquor, never any excess. Back and forth she swam. As Saunders watched her, he thought that Rose was trying to wear herself out. Rose lifted herself out of the pool finally, her face emotionless as when she had entered.
Now I must have my shower,
Rose said, and off she went to bathe and dress as she always did. It was nearly dusk now, hours since Joe had been taken away. And as the car made its stately way along North Ocean Boulevard, police appeared at the intersections to stop traffic.
Oh my gosh.
Other police vehicles led the way, their rotating blue lights illuminating the dusk. So everyone else is like emergency status. She needs to go sign the papers so we can do a procedure on Joe. And she is not responding.
Oh my gosh, Rose. That makes me so sad and so angry because what if they could have helped him?
I don't know. It's hard to think about. Her two friends, Denial and Routine, were gone now. Rose sat alone, encased in the back seat of the Chrysler, heading inexorably toward Joe. Joe had suffered a massive stroke. His right arm and leg were paralyzed, and when he tried to walk, words came out that had no meaning. The right side of his face was paralyzed too, and he could not control his mouth, saliva dripping down his chin. Rose went into Joe's room, but he did not recognize his wife, and she went to the chapel to pray. Soon afterward, Jack arrived from Washington, and the president, Jackie, and Bobby walked into the chapel. The Kennedy women were all there now, or on their way, descending on the resort, full of desperate urgency. For all their lives, the Kennedy women had depended on Joe. He had given Rose, his daughters, and his daughters-in-law wealth to live as few lived, but that was only the beginning of their inheritance. They depended on him in ways that outsiders could hardly fathom, ways that in this great and terrible sickness, they themselves were only realizing. His daughters loved their father with a deep and fearful love, and they loved him now in this moment of terrible need as they had in his years of incomparable strength. They brought Joe home and laid him in his bed. The nurses dressed him and fed him and wheeled him outside. He could not walk and he could not talk, but his intellect remained alive. His wife and daughters could see in his eyes and hear in his fitful shrieks and feel in the flailing of his arms that Joseph P. Kennedy was all there, imprisoned in this condition, struggling to wrest his way out, and then collapsing back into seeming despair. The Kennedys faced a predicament unlike any in their lives. Quote,
"They want to concentrate only on good things," said Dr. Henry Betts,
one of the specialists involved with Joe.
"If anything bad happens, forget it and move on to something good. And they've done that all their lives. And here was something bad that they couldn't get rid of. For a group of people who don't want to face bad things, it was hard. Harder than death. Because with death, they always went on. They'd go in the morning, and then they'd go home, find God, find diversions, and then they'd find fun and work and things like that. They go on because they repress it in a way. But how could you repress this? Because he was around all the time. Horror and death."
This is really sad too. A lot of times when Rose would walk into Joe's bedroom, he would just start screaming, "No, no, no." And wouldn't ever relax until she left. And so she would just say, "I'm going, dear, I'm going." And she would hurry out of the room.
Aww.
Yeah.
He was so ashamed of his condition.
Yes. Ugh. He could allow Luella Hennessy and Anne Gargan to care for him, nurses, whatever. But for his wife to see him in that way, it was very, very hard. And they kind of lost their best friendship that they had always had. So they still spent a lot of time together, but it just got really hard.
He also might have felt, because I could totally see Dad being so like, "I don't want this put on you. I don't want the rest of your life
right
to be taking care of me."
Mm-hmm.
Like, other people can do that. Just
yeah,
go live your life,
mm-hmm.
kind of a thing. But.
And he had enough. He was like able enough to get on phone calls with Jack and kind of interact in that way. And that wasn't so intrusive. So he like clung to those, I think. But the in-person stuff was really hard. One time he was so upset that he even kicked over a water glass. And Rose let a little bit of her emotion slip. And she said,
"What have I done?"
Though she had done nothing. She desperately tried to control her own emotion. But she screamed out,
"Oh, Joe, please, God, tell me what I've done."
Oh,
it's so sad.
It's so sad. And Rose is such a, not people pleaser, but like doesn't want to rock the boat, doesn't want to cause.
Rose.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like, she does seem to me like a peacemaker.
Mm-hmm.
And so when he's reacting like that, every time she enters the room, she's like banishing herself.
Right.
Like, I would just be like, "No, you're being so stupid.
Yeah, you
I
need
want
to get over
here.
Yourself.
Yeah. And fight back. And she just.
Because remember how Jackie always said, Rose wouldn't examine her emotions and like wouldn't open up and Jack would be terrified to do it. It was the upbringing.
Mm-hmm.
That's where the upbringing quote is from. I don't know that she would have stopped long enough and actually inspected the situation to realize that Joe was just shameful and embarrassed and it was really hard for him. She probably mostly left it as like a surface level, he's just pissed off at me, like he's mad. But I don't know how much she would have actually contemplated it and given herself the permission to take control of the situation, you know?
Yeah.
So that was December of 1961. And then by April, he was doing better enough to be moved to a rehabilitation center. So they flew him to New York City.
Did he go home from the hospital though? Or he stayed in the hospital?
Yeah, he went home from the hospital. Whenever Rose was like walking into the room and he was freaking out, that was at Palm Beach.
Okay.
And then he had had a few months at home trying to just like learn how to swallow again and all that kind of stuff. But then he was doing better enough. And he wanted to get better was the heartbreaking thing. Like, the Kennedys poured a ton of time and money and effort into helping him rehabilitate because he wanted to gain whatever he could back. He didn't just lay down and pass, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So they flew him to New York City and everybody, when he moves there, gathers around him and helps him get settled in. Like, everybody wants to be there all the time, you know? Aww. Even though they're the attorney general and the head of the Special Olympics and the president of the United States, etc.
They were probably scared he was going to die. And also, I'm sure they just felt like, he has done everything for us. How can we not be here?
We have to be there for him.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Just so he knows that we care.
Yeah.
The Kennedy women arrived at Joe's private bungalow at the new residential rehabilitation center, Horizon House, bursting with enthusiasm as if they could will Joe back to good health.
It also makes me so sad. I don't understand why they didn't do this for Rosemary. Like, I know. I still
probably because
wrap my brain
all the kids
it.
Are the ones that are doing this, not Rose and not Joe. And
that's
they were all
true.
Children
yeah.
at the time.
And they weren't told.
They didn't know what was going on.
Yeah, they weren't told until we figured out that Eunice was told a decade or 12 years later.
Yeah. The point is, they didn't know for a long time after Rosemary.
Yeah, and like you said, only the parents do. But when they figured out, why didn't they do that? Why didn't they gather around her?
They all felt like they owed so much to Joe Sr., I think. So I think that's a lot of the difference. And then also,
I think most of the difference.
And I think that the reason that they didn't do it after they found out, too, is because this just happened. Like, he's just now going through it all. And
there's sort of still a lot of hope that maybe it will pass, kind of. Mm-hmm. Like, he will get back to his old self.
And it's like a transitional period. And they know that he knows who they are. And with Rosemary, so much time had passed. And she didn't
react
have,
like they knew. Like,
yeah.
She knew who they were, and the nurses were saying, don't bother her routine.
So it was just a different situation. I think they also all felt very close to Joe Sr. And because so much time had passed from the time that Rosemary
was close
went
to, them.
To the hospital
yeah.
and was close to them to the time that they found out what had happened, they weren't as close. They didn't know her daily routine. They didn't know
even who she was, really.
Yeah. And didn't have the confidence.
Like, they knew their sister, the kid, Rosemary. They didn't know the adult who had no speech. And
yeah,
they were like so much more unsure about the situation, even in with Joe. It's like, we know what we're allowed to do, kind of.
Right. Because they were getting a lot more communication back from him, too.
Mm-hmm. And
Rosemary didn't have that much intellectual presence, even after Joe's stroke, he had a lot more. But anyway, the Kennedy women arrived at Joe's private bungalow at the new residential rehabilitation center, Horizon House, bursting with enthusiasm as if they could will Joe back to good health. Pat had her own private way of communicating with her father, as she was, as Dr. Betts recalled, quote,
absolutely fantastic with him.
Jean cooed sweetly in her father's ear, telling him that now he would get better and be his old domineering self. As for Eunice, she too attempted to bolster her father, but her concerns went beyond that. She had already visited the center, marching through the facility with a cascade of questions pouring down on the doctors. Today, she strutted back and forth, issuing orders, demanding a consultation with the doctors. So she had been in more of the hospitalized settings.
Yeah.
For
disabilities.
Yeah, for all the disabilities for her research. And so she took more of like a facilitator director charge of the situation. They all had to do something. And Bobby and Ethel paraded through the tiny bungalow, flushing the toilet, turning the shower on, making minute inspections.
Everything works, Dad,
Bobby said. Rose was not convinced. She insisted that the Caroline be flown immediately to bring the cook and the serving maid.
Oh my God.
The Kennedys ran back and forth, a great blunderbuss of emotion and activity, until suddenly Joe erupted in a shriek, banging his feet on the ground. And the women scattered, running from the bungalow in a burst. Quiet had descended on the little house, and Joe was sitting alone in his wheelchair in the living room when Jackie arrived, sliding silently into the room. At times, the First Lady was a woman of the most willful manipulativeness, selfish and self-absorbed. There was also a Jackie, who was a woman of exquisite sensitivity and concern. It was this woman who knelt on a footstool in front of Joe and whispered,
I'm praying for you every day, Grandpa, so you work hard while you're here.
She knew how Joe had dominated the world around him, and she placed her head in his lap as if she needed his solace. Then she kissed his crippled hand and his crippled face. As she whispered to Joe, he grew peaceful and relaxed until his face did not look contorted at all. She just knew how people worked, and she knew what they needed emotionally in at each situation, and she knew how to communicate that to them.
Yeah.
She knew how to help people.
Yeah, she almost positioned herself as a child, like on his lap, like,
yes,
like laying on his lap, like,
because
that.
That's how he was comfortable, was being the dad.
Mm-hmm. Being the father figure. That was his favorite and, yeah, like you said, most comfortable role. And he was now the kid that all the kids were taking care of.
Uh-huh.
And she gave him what he actually needed.
She actually provided comfort for him. And everybody else thought that they were helping with the comfort, you know, taking care of him, being there for him. So they were doing their best, but she understood who Joe Sr. actually was.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
That's so wild.
She was just so intuitive and she just paid attention.
Yeah, did we decide that Enneagram-wise, Joe is a 3-wing 4 and then Rose is a 9? Is a 9?
Wing 1.
Wing 1, yeah. Mm-hmm. Because, yeah, there are a lot of instances where you've talked to me about where Joe and Jackie kind of see so eye to eye, and everyone else was like confused about what was going on or didn't see the use in it. And they were the two that were like on the same page.
Because they were the only ones who had any sort of 4 in them in the entire
any
family.
Sort of identity emotion.
So he had obviously a very rough and long road of rehab, but he slowly improved. Jackie brought him an exquisite walking stick, and for the first time he walked, moving down the hall and back. He sat down exhausted, and Jackie kissed his hands.
Grandpa, remember when you told us that you didn't believe in coming out in second place? You came out first today, Grandpa. You had yourself a victory.
Rose agreed with the doctors to establish rules that during the hours of rehabilitation, no outsiders, not even family, could visit. This was in part to keep Anne away from her uncle.
Oh my gosh.
She meant well, but she was constantly hampering the rehabilitation by telling Joe that he did not have to do anything he did not want to do. And Rose is like, yeah, he does. So shut up. Quote,
Anne did not make him happy.
Dr. Betts recalled. She was devoted to him, but she was much more manipulative. He loved and hated her. She was not relaxing to him, and she stirred him. Anne was bonded to Joe's neediness, to the invalid within him, and she was obsessed with staying at Horizon House. So because she felt so good about herself when Joe needed her, she wanted to keep him needing her.
Oh,
and Rose
gosh.
Wanted him to get better.
Yeah.
And not need people. Rose not only told Anne that she could not be around during the day, but pushed her to leave and to visit her sister in Detroit. Now Rose had her days to herself and her evenings largely alone with Joe because she had sent Anne away. His favorite New York restaurant was La Caravelle, and Rose arranged for catered dinners served by his waiter from the restaurant, served on a candlelight table with fine china and silver. Rose again had routine and discipline in her life, and she no longer sat nervously, ready to flinch at Joe's next outburst. So they were kind of settling in together, and Rose is more so coming back into her role that she served throughout their marriage.
Wait, so he's with her at this dinner?
Yeah, so he's still in the rehab center in New York, and she's arranging special treatment and getting the waiter that he always gets at the restaurant at the location to bring catering in to the to the rehab center and serve him by candlelight, even though he's in rehab.
Yes. Okay.
She's recreating his favorite New York restaurant for him. And it seems like Joe is not having as many outbursts and is able to spend a lot of his evenings with Rose and accept her company and her companionship.
Okay.
After dinner, she took
Rose,
took off her shoes, and they watched television.
This is Dr. Betts.
They'd sit there, just like an elderly couple you might see, as nearly as I could see, very content.
Rose did not spend all of her days ministering to her husband. She started again giving lectures on her years as the ambassadress in London, a subject blissfully free of any hint of tragedy or unhappiness.
I'm sad, but also rolling my eyes.
I know. In late April, she traveled to Paris for clothes shopping, returning afterwards to Joe's room at Horizon House. On Father's Day, Anne called Joe from Detroit, and when he got off the phone, he exploded in a rage. Rose shuddered at the outburst and hurried from the cottage.
"I don't understand, Mrs. Dallas,"
she cried to the nurse.
"I simply don't understand. I thought he was getting along so well, but now this. It's like he used to be."
During the next few days, Anne called repeatedly, beseeching Joe that she be allowed back into the sacred fold of the family, back ministering to Joe.
Wait, so Anne is yelling at Joe, telling him to allow Rose to be...
She's like, no, Anne is advocating for herself to be let back in. Anne wants to be his primary caretaker and basically take Rose's place. Anne Gargan, the niece.
What?
Yes.
I'm so confused.
They have such a love-hate relationship with her. And she's like great in some aspects, but way overly domineering and selfish. And she wants to have her special place in Joe Kennedy's life and wants to be like important. And basically she's like high on the significance of
the close, like the proximity to Joe.
Yes. Well, she was freaking causing a ruckus. And so they're like, Anne, you need to leave because you're freaking getting a little cuckoo.
Wait, so I'm confused. So right after Joe has a stroke, before Joe has a stroke, Anne is hanging out at the house all the time because she was recuperating. And then
from multiple sclerosis.
Yes, why she couldn't be a nun anymore.
Mm-hmm.
So she gets better and then stays around the house with Joe and Rose to just like be a little bit of a caretaker and help out and be a companion.
Right.
It's mutually beneficial.
Uh-huh.
So then Joe has a stroke and she is caretaking for him and he doesn't want Rose around.
Right.
And then can you help me from there?
So then I think Joe is opening more up to Rose and Anne starts to be threatened by him enjoying Rose's company more so. And so she was like stressing him out and causing issues, being super uptight and controlling of everything. So they asked her to please leave. So she left, but then she's calling Joe on the phone, telling him like, you need to let me come back there because I need to be the one taking care of you. I know what's best. You need me.
And he can't even like really reply.
Yeah. So then he just like starts screaming and Rose is like, what's going on? Like, he hasn't been acting like this in a long time.
So
I'm upset.
She's the reason why Joe is upset. Right
I think
now.
So. So then.
But Rose doesn't know that?
She says she doesn't understand what's going on. The old man could not talk, but he could understand, grunting out his responses into the telephone. Rose didn't know what to do. Dr. Betts had gone off to Long Island, but she called him. Quote,
"Now, I can stay here now with Mr. Kennedy, or I can go to the Cape,"
Rose said over the phone.
"I could tell Anne to stay in Detroit and I could stay here, or I could go to the Cape and let Anne come back. Now, what should I do?"
The young doctor found himself caught up in the psychodrama. Rose's daughters had told him that their father had become nervous around Rose, yet everything he had seen suggested that Joe enjoyed his wife's company. And maybe that was a little bit of a miscommunication because at first he was really upset by Rose's.
Yeah. And maybe that's where when they were around the most.
Yes.
Was initially after. And that's when, Rose was not helping.
But he's seeing that right now he looks like he really likes you being around. This was a pattern that he had often seen among elderly and paralyzed patients. They were frightened of dependency, yet they were ready to settle into reliance on others. This was even more true in a man of such power and independence as Joe Kennedy. Over the weeks, this awesome struggle had been waged within his psyche, its ending signaled by the acceptance of Rose. So he was just finally like coming to accept his
reality
state. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
"I don't know,"
Betts said, though he thought he knew the answer. at least from Joe's perspective. The doctor, however, was astute enough not to want to be drawn into making the decision. Quote,
I don't think it's for me to tell you what to do, but I can tell you that your husband is most happy when you're there.
Aww. Rose hung up. She was in the midst of her own terrible dilemma. For most of the 4.5 decades of their marriage, Rose had lived her life and Joe had lived his life. She had laboriously constructed an existence for herself. That was the way Joe had wanted it. But now it was his life they were both living. She was there with the shadow of a man, there for his rages, there to witness his mumbling, stumbling shadow of a self, there for the regimen of pain and memory. All her life, she had pushed away all the pain, be it Joe Jr.'s death, Kathleen's marriage, and then death, Rosemary's condition, or the realities of her marriage. But coming here each day, this she could not push away. Rose's life was as regulated as the seasons. It was time for her to go back to Hyannisport for the summer, back to her own routine of daily mass, swims, walks on the beach. Rose called Betts back. Rose was asking Betts, not for advice as much as to confirm what she wanted to do. She called him 3 times, but each time he only reported his observations, and there was no point talking to him any longer. That's not what she wanted to hear. She wanted to hear, no, go live your own life. And so she called him 3 times to try to get that answer, and she never did get that answer. Like, so she's like, well, I'm not going to talk to you anymore. She knew what she wanted to do. She only had to do it now to put it behind her.
Shut up.
Rose returned to Horizon House. She stood there in front of Joe and told her husband that she would be going back to Hyannisport and Anne would be returning to take care of him.
No, no, no,
the old man shouted, his arms flailing out as Rose stepped back to avoid his attack.
You can come home for a couple of weeks during the 4th of July,
she went on, trying to placate him.
Oh, Joe, we're trying to do what's best, and you know we have to take care of Anne.
Joe continued screaming like some primordial curse, the sound rising out of a deep reservoir of pain and anger and disbelief. As she turned to leave the house, he picked up objects and threw them at her. By the time Dr. Betts returned from his weekend, Rose was gone for good, and Anne was back, ensconced in the cottage.
Oh my gosh, Rose, are you kidding? That blows my mind.
So, so, so stupid. I don't...
This is why I have trust issues.
Yeah, I don't understand
it
completely.
You can't count on anyone. Like, she was committed to him for 40-plus years, and then you just abandoned him like nothing?
She was committed to him... in the way that they had
set up
at the beginning of the marriage, where she could go and travel and they wouldn't call each other to ruin each other's vacations if anything was going on at home.
Yeah,
so as not to ruin my trip.
I cannot believe that.
From then on, Anne was her uncle's constant companion with him day and night. And the thing is, Joe cannot communicate or push her away. And he's just like trapped in his body. And then she's just there all the time. Like he's literally, he's literally being tortured. And Rose wouldn't acknowledge that.
I'm sure people are blaming it on him too. Because when... yeah, people who are more so like nonverbal and they're quote unquote throwing a fit, like with Rosemary.
How else do you communicate?
Well, no, maybe my sisters are just getting to have all the freaking fun and I'm frustrated. No, maybe the person who's taking care of me won't let me heal.
Yes.
And I'm lashing out.
Yes, that
and
is.
And they just nobody's like taking time to listen to them to try to actually solve.
No, literally, she, Anne, well, like took the power of his life away from him. She controlled him.
And I'm kind of mad at the doctor for not, like, I just understand, saying. Like, when you're a therapist, you're not supposed to freaking lead and tell
them what to do.
You're supposed to help them arrive to the conclusion.
Their own conclusion.
But he was, And he was trying to do that with Rose. I can't tell you what to do. I can't tell you the decision that you need to make for your life and for your family.
Observation.
I'm leading you to the right thing. He wants you there. He does best when you're there. I'm more mad at her about Rosemary now.
Uh-oh.
It's more of a choice than it first appears. Which when this one is even way more because... Which, well, actually, do we know that? Because I'm like, if she didn't really know what was happening, that's just not true. She did.
She knew.
Yeah, she wasn't like the kids who, they like, had to figure it out themselves.
They understood this way more than Rosemary. And even like the doctors in this situation are being way more communicative and telling her, you should stick around. They didn't say that with Rosemary. So she had a lot more understanding that she should be there with this one.
But then also it kind of confuses me because she did go back, like, more than anyone else other than maybe Eunice, but she did circle back to Rosemary. Like, she's trying to leave everything in the dust, and she did that with Rosemary for a while. Mm-hmm. But then, yeah, and later on,
once Jack and Eunice went back, she started coming around as well and arranging for Rosemary to come out to Hyannisport and making sure she has a pool to swim in. And
yeah. Going and visiting Rosemary.
Yeah. In Wisconsin.
Yeah, in Wisconsin. So I just don't understand.
I just don't think that she wanted it to overtake her life.
What are you doing? You're going to freaking golf every day for exercise? Like, it's not like she...
And you can do that in New York. Like, find a freaking country club in the suburbs. Like,
I just don't understand. It must just be so... so deep-rooted.
I think it's just so hard for her. Like, I don't think it's the she wanted her own life. Now that I'm saying that, I don't think it's that. No, I think it's she wanted to banish the pain of watching them. She didn't want to have to see that. It wasn't about her life. It was about avoiding their life.
It was too painful for her what had happened to both of them.
Mm-hmm. She couldn't face it every day.
She loved them so much.
Because she had been such in a practice of never facing her pain that she couldn't do that every day. She did not have the coping skills in place.
I just can't imagine. Your husband is literally saying, no, don't leave me, no. And you just walk out the door. I wonder if she had Jack to.
Too.
Yeah, I know. That's the exact thing that I was thinking of too.
And Jack said, oh, what a wonderful mother leaving your freaking kids who are telling you that they need them.
So that's why I'm trying to figure out how could she have made that to where it's better. Like, I understand with Rosemary how, I'm upsetting her. The nurses are saying she gets upset.
Yeah, you shouldn't
come. So she felt like, okay, I'm doing the selfless thing and also the easier thing for me.
But it just happens to be the same thing.
Yes. With Joe, I feel like there has to, for her to reason with it in her head, there has to be some sort of selfless way that this is the better option. Like, she's convinced herself that.
No, because she literally said, you know, we have to take care of Anne too.
Yeah, so that, there you go. So that's the selfish.
Yeah, selfless.
Selfless, sorry, selfless. We just cannot talk
selfish,
today.
Selfless decision.
That's the selfless, yeah, selfish decision. It's the sphere.
It's the sphere.
But it's true. Like, she, that's how she, so it's told, like, she, herself.
That's the one that she wanted to do. And so she found a way for it to be the right thing to do.
For someone else, that it wasn't her. Yeah.
But it's just really, really, really awful.
But, like, your freaking husband.
But they had been best friends, but they hadn't been intimate or, like, emotionally leaned on each other or been that emotionally vulnerable with each other, like, consistently throughout their marriage. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I feel like I don't care. Someone's in your life that close to you for 40 years, you don't just leave them.
I know.
Shouldn't leave the freaking nieces and nephews to fend for themselves. They didn't leave anyone. So yeah. What in the world?
And Anne was, like, actually a toxic situation for Joe. And she was leading him to that.
She had to have straight up just reasoned with herself that, like, okay, looking at all of Rose's decisions and who she was as a person, she was the organizer, the person who made sure everyone was taken care of on, like, a physical perspective and education wise and Catholic, like, religion wise.
Yeah.
So it wasn't necessarily like a burden for her, or that is like a burden that she like wanted to carry, providing for everyone and organizing all of that. But it didn't really involve any pain. You're right. As soon as it involved the pain. True vulnerability, true pain, she needed to like clog the...
It's fight, flight, or freeze. And she is flight every time. Trauma comes up, she flees.
Yeah.
It's a survival instinct. And she never worked to like really overcome that. I don't think. Because you can push past that survival brain.
Absolutely.
And she just didn't. Mostly. I mean, she did for a while when she felt like he really needed her. And then she felt like maybe she felt like she had her way out, her opportunity.
A solution. Yeah. She has to be so good at like not
lying to herself.
Yeah. Not disassociating, but like compartmentalizing.
Denying reality.
Denying. Well, she was in such denial with Rosemary. And then also with this, like you go back to with Rosemary, it makes a little bit more sense too, because she had so many other kids, like little kids at home still. Yeah,
that she could just distract, occupy herself.
Like be so distracted, and like those people do need you. Mm-hmm. With this, the person that needs you, you're abandoning, and then you have no one else to take care of. You're going back to a life of playing golf solitude. And swimming. The isolation and the quiet, that would kill me.
I don't know how she like, would how want could you, that.
Yeah, how could you not think about that? Like, how would she that was a not nine.
She was a nine. She was a nine. And we don't understand a nine.
At all.
I don't get it. I can't. That sounds like torture for me. That sounds like prison.
Honestly, did Eunice even need someone to go to college with her every day and sit through classes and wake her up? Or did Rose just invent a job for herself to ignore reality?
That is a very good question.
Okay, so I think I figured it out, or at least a reason, because I'm not satisfied with what we've sussed out so far.
I know, it's weird.
I'm like, there's just no way. But I mean, I see it. It's not like it's totally out of line for Rose's character to disassociate her or to...
Deny reality. Completely.
Clearly, she's a pro at that. But I think it's not just that she justified her leaving and replacing her with Anne, because Anne needed a place. They needed to help take care of her. Okay. So that's like a little bit selfless for her to make it right in her mind. Mm-hmm. I think it was also the fact, because I was like, wait, why are the kids not... saying, no, don't abandon Dad, because they were telling Rose that she was making him upset.
Yeah.
And so she trusted, I think, more wasn't enough the kids. Enough permission for her to, quote unquote, feel right abandoning him. Yeah. I think she still knew what she was doing.
I do too.
But not on the surface. I think she could feel like, no, the kids did tell me that I'm upsetting him.
Yeah. Soon afterwards, Joe left the rehabilitation center for some weeks on Cape Cod. He was supposed to return, but he never did. Quote,
Mrs. Kennedy changed a great deal after her husband left Horizon House, perhaps because a decision had been reached that he not only relieved her.
What?
What do you mean, what?
Relieved her?
Yeah.
But also left her conscience intact. She was nervous and uncomfortable around illness of any kind, and she had gone through severe shock in trying to cope with her husband's condition.
Dude, it's literally Janet Auchincloss saying, don't lie, that did not happen.
Literally. Like, it's just like all those upper-class women, they were trained, bred to do that.
That was nurture.
Yes.
It was the upbringing.
I believe she was sincere in feeling that she had made the right choice by putting Anne in a position of authority. She knew she was neither physically nor emotionally able to care for her husband.
The nurse, Mrs. Dallas. Joe began a life of being shuttled between Hyannisport and Palm Beach under the observant, all-seeing eyes of his favorite niece.
So she, this favorite niece, just never got married, didn't have her own career, just fully...
made the Kennedys her life. Made Joe Kennedy her life. There were nurses around the clock too, but Rose could not stand them flitting through the house in their starched white uniforms, angels of disease and death, and she insisted that they wear casual clothes, though not her favorite shade of rose.
I don't blame her for that.
Neither do I.
Also, I wonder how much trauma she had from Rosemary. If this was like bringing up a lot of guilt.
That's true. I didn't even think of that. That is a lot of similar circumstances that definitely would make you go back. Mm-hmm. It would definitely bring up a lot. So,
and if she felt like she did do the wrong thing,
you have to face yourself. You have to admit that, and that you can't do anything about it technically now. Like, you did do that. And so it felt better to just keep denying it, mm-hmm. running.
And maybe too, in some like sick and twisted way, that she felt like if it would be more of a betrayal to Rosemary if she was there for Joe and she wasn't with Rosemary. So it's like, if I do the same thing with both, then that's just the way that I handled it.
Uh-huh.
And if I am there the second time, then it's even worse that I wasn't there for Rosemary.
I could see that a little bit.
Yeah. And that would be freaking hard to deal with. That, and especially since Rose was more tied to being a mom than she was to being a wife. Like,
yeah.
It was a God's will
assignment to her. And if she had failed at that mission, yeah, she would have failed God.
But if she just wasn't capable or wasn't best for them, then she didn't have to admit that
she screwed up.
Which would be absolute, for someone who has coping skills, would be absolutely
so hard.
It's so impossible to face.
Mm-hmm.
But still then, like, how did she circle back to Rosemary? Still, you know?
She probably just gave herself the narrative, okay, Rosemary has settled into herself. She's fine now. She can accept visitors now. Now that I can be there for her, I will be there for her. But I couldn't be there for her before.
Yeah.
I couldn't. You know?
Yeah. And she still was. It's not like she was her main, like her primary caregiver.
No, it's not like she moved her home or anything.
Yeah. But wow.
And Joe was like, woman, I don't freaking care what you gotta say. I paid for this whole house and I'm living in it.
So what?
He just moved himself back home. He was supposed to go visit Hyannis Port for just a couple weeks during the summer as a vacation. He went home and never went back to the rehab center.
I wonder how he was able to communicate that.
No, no.
Literally.
No. Just flailing and screaming. And they were just like, you know what?
Okay.
Fine. Dude, if you weren't going to be able to fully rehab, why would you spend the rest of your life in a freaking hospital, basically?
Why? Yeah.
Everyone could see this is about where you're going to be able to get with your
especially at 70 something.
Yes. That's so definitely what I would do.
Yeah. Did Rose live there as well?
Yeah.
She just wasn't taking care of him.
Right. And then she let Anne continue to have control of his care. I just don't understand that. I would want her the frick out of there. Like, that is just maddening.
And it's like she knew that at the beginning because she did tell her to leave.
Yes. And then it's like she felt either guilty for telling Anne to leave, or she was like, you know what? I don't want to do this job. So, Anne, you can come back and do it then. If you want to do it, do it. Because I don't want to. I can't
handle
it. And
she did, like, she was trustworthy in a way.
Yeah,
and
for
she was
sure.
good at taking care of him in a way.
And I think that you bringing up the whole Rosemary, like her, it making her relive all of that. Rose was Rosemary's primary caregiver, even from her birth on, mm-hmm. when they didn't even know what was going on. And I think that someone being helpless in that way when they shouldn't be, they're not 3 years old. It's just putting her back in the same situation. And I think that that was forcing her to relive Rosemary every day. Like being around Joe.
Like pre-lobotomy even.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. With the tantrums and the
mourning all of that. And like just
literally
remembering
reliving it.
Remembering and reliving Rosemary.
In the same house. In the same dynamic. Yeah.
And so she could be around Joe as a companion or a wife. But she couldn't be his caretaker because the caretaker part is what brought
she
up Rosemary.
She was traumatized by, kind of. Yeah.
I don't think that she was like upset about Rosemary. It was just traumatic for both of them because you can't fix it for your daughter.
Right.
But you're...
And she was like suffocated by the inability to fix it and the constant like... It's a lot of pressure.
Yeah. And Rose cared.
Yeah,
she,
a ton.
She found endless solutions and helpful things for Rosemary to be a part of. Playing tennis every day with her mom. Reading lessons. Going to certain private schools. Going to camps. Being able to do like more authority roles, like helping out with little kids. Like Rose tried really hard to care for Rosemary and she still failed. And I think that the caretaker role in general was just so loaded at that point in her life. Was just too much.
Also, thinking about her being a 9 and... when they lose their confidence in doing something, they feel inadequate. And so
they run.
They run completely.
Yeah, you're right.
Anyone else knows better than me. Yeah. I clearly failed. I'm just going to fail again. And so she felt like, oh, I didn't. I lost all the confidence that I had in myself to do what was right by Rosemary. I recognize that I failed.
I'm not a good caretaker.
I'm not a good caretaker. And literally, she like... just thought, I am not fit to take care of Joe. So no matter if it's going to be like messy and a confident person would be...
understand that that's just how it is.
That it was a complex situation and it didn't end well. And yeah, there's a million things you could have done different with hindsight. But here it is again and you're his wife and you will do what you can to help the situation. Instead, she was like, all I do is bring almost like negative or...
You have to acknowledge that it is a traumatic situation for her. She has experienced this before and it did not end well. It did not end well.
Well, at least he freaking got to go home.
Yeah. But then Jack died. What year did he die?
63.
No, not Jack.
Oh.
Joe.
I think he lived 10 years after he had a stroke.
So he saw Jack and Bobby die?
Yeah. Yes. And Rose
his
had to go through both.
His worst nightmare.
Yeah, and Rose had to go through that after having lost, basically, Joe.
So she's lost her husband, her firstborn, her secondborn, her thirdborn, her fourthborn, and her seventhborn. Six out of... 10 possible candidates.
And I think two.
Gone.
A grandkid as well. And
Patrick.
And Jackie died before Rose.
Yeah. In the 90s.
Yeah.
In like 94 or something like that.
I don't remember, but freaking a lot of people.
A lot of people.
That
man.
Is a lot of loss.
Well, we've had our own tragedy.
Two, you know.
Join us here next week to hear all about Jack and Jackie's intimate family life and a love affair that never should have been.
Thank you all for listening to today's episode. If you enjoyed it, please give us a review on Apple, rate us on Spotify, and share Blood and Business with a friend or a sibling. If you'd like to support the show, the best way is to become a patron of Blood and Business. You will get bonus content every month, including a monthly bonus episode, interactive main episodes, and behind-the-scenes footage.
To keep up with us day-to-day, you can follow us at Blood and Business on Instagram and TikTok. You can find the link for Instagram, TikTok, and Patreon in the show notes below. Thank you so much for the support, and we will see you back here next week for your regularly scheduled programming on
Blood and Business.
Do we need to say anything more about Joe's role in the kid's life during this period? Like before he had the stroke, just like a little bit. Obviously, Bobby and Jack called him and he was still giving them advice. But he was
I read that essentially retired. Yeah, I read that people assumed that he was going to be the puppet master behind Jack's puppet as president. And that is absolutely not what happened. Jack was president. The Kennedys were president, but
Jack and Bobby
and Jack and Bobby and Eunice. kind of like a bird flight formation where Jack is at the helm. Bobby and Eunice are at his sides. Jackie and, you know, Sarge Shriver are behind them. And it just kind of goes back and back and back. And Joe Sr. was actually at the back of the pack.
Yeah. And played more of a father role than a political role.
Yeah, probably more of a traditionally fatherly role than he had ever played in his entire life.
Yeah.
That
for the boys, at least.
Yeah.
He was much more of a dad to the girls growing up. But to the boys, yeah, he was so
instead
much
instead of
more
their manager,
just, yeah,
he was their dad.
Yeah.
He got them there.
And then it was his time to, yeah, be more of the emotional,
supportive dad.
Mm-hmm.
He was like the patriarch, the guide.
Mm-hmm.
Really, he didn't even guide their decisions. He just was there to reassure when they needed to talk to him.
Well, I guess he never told them what to think, but they did. Or he did like sign them up for everything. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
He guided their path. He didn't guide their decisions along the path.